It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 645. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message on Skype. My name is Mike Tech Show, all one word. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, and also facebook.com/miketechshow. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on-demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com or visit instanthousecall.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow to get your 15-day free trial. Clearly, my Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl on Sunday, a great game, and I had to replace the intro with the Eagles fight song, which I've heard a zillion times this week already. So that's every time there's a score at the Lincoln Financial Field, that's the fight song that's sung by, in unison by 70,000 people. And anytime there's a group of Eagles fans that gather anywhere, no matter how small, that song breaks out. That also breaks out at other events. You could be at a Phillies game or a Flyers game, and the Eagles fight song will break out. Now, on to, I have a great show planned. I have lots of stories from the trenches. I have some follow-up emails. Let's talk about the convention. We do not have the rights to the name Unconvention anymore. So it's now IT Owners Compass, and that's ITOCompass, COMPASS.com. Because that is now, if you go there, it's the same content that I was talking about last week. It's a great name because we are going to help navigate your IT business. The venues listed, you can check out the hotel that's in the same spot and get an incredible special discount if you sign up now. You want to get your tickets now because the first people who buy tickets will get priority seating at the main talks. You're guaranteed the first couple rows because of buying your tickets early. We wanted to give you incentive. Also, it's only $199. After those few tickets are gone, it's going to be $250. But it is so well worth it. Go through, take a look. All of the schedule is not there. We have so much planned. You can read about the keynote, read about the venue. There's going to be a boat ride on Saturday after. You're going to have a 90-minute boat ride with not only some of the sponsors, but the author of the Pumpkin Plan, Mike Mikowicz. He will be signing, and you will get his book, and he will autograph it on the boat ride. There's lots of things, but we don't want to focus. It's just not all about Mike and his talk, which, of course, is going to help your business. But it's the rest of the content that's being planned is we're stepping it up. You're going to really like it. Check out the site, itocompass.com, and hope to see you there. And of course, it's Chicago, August 24th through the 26th. What have I been working on? We had a Dell Optiplex here, we'll say, in the shop that would not produce any video. So it looked like, no matter what you would do, it looked like the system was booting, but it didn't go to a full boot, and we got nothing on the video. And there's a dual video card in this Optiplex. It's I think it's an Optiplex. It was a 790. No, 745, I think. And what was bothering us when we took the video card out, even the built-in VGA from the motherboard, we would not get video. But once I took the video card out, I started getting beeps, and the beep code will reveal what is going on. So the first link tonight is a great link, I think, to have in your bag, so to speak, which is the beep codes, because we had a beep, three beeps, and another beep. And if you look at the list of the Optiplex beep codes, that's bad RAM. There was 4 1-gig sticks. Didn't even mess around. Just popped them out because this is an older Optiplex. Popped 2 2-gig sticks in. It booted up beautifully. Now, put the client in a position that they can upgrade the memory easier by just adding 2 more 2s when he wants. He didn't have the funds to do that right now, so we just bought the RAM for the 4-gig. Something that's old school, which is making sure that there's other ways to diagnose hardware problems. And on the post of a system booting, the beeps may be telling you something. And so just search the model that you have in the beep codes online, and you're going to get a list. All of a sudden, and this again has to be because either a Windows update or an Office 2016 update or Office 365, Outlook profile slow to load. There's lots of shows that I have went over the different techniques on trying to diagnose what's wrong. And all of those did not solve the problem. But I narrowed the boot time for myself because even my profile on one of my laptops was taking over a minute. I'm like, no, that's not acceptable. And I got it down to 20 seconds by doing a few things. And I wanted to share that and share some of the links. The next link is a few things to try if your Outlook 2016 profile takes a long time to load. This is a TechNet forum. What you need to do is disable hardware graphics acceleration. I believe out of all the things I did, that made the most impact. Something else we noticed, and you do get some creep of increased time if you start in safe mode, then exit out and start in regular mode. I mean, the profile loads instantly. So you think, okay, then you have some add-ins. No, I have all the add-ins disabled on my profile, and it was still taking a long time to load. So you would say, well, Mike, you have big PSTs, zero PSTs, and a very small OST with this test account on my laptop. So it was easy for me to keep trying things because I was the minimal profile, and I had to just keep trying things. And finally, checking that box, disabling hardware graphics. And there are some other things to try. One is to delete the contents of the content Outlook folder. And this is something I had not seen before. One of the things, once you try to find that folder, you're going to find out you don't have access. So if you follow the instructions to the next link that I have, you will be able to navigate. You have to turn on hidden at system files in the file and folder options in control panel. And then once you turn that on, then go back and navigate where that folder is located, and you'll be able to get to it, and you'll be able to delete the contents of that folder. And of course, do this with Outlook being closed. There's a few things to try that are over and above anything I've ever talked about for diagnosing Outlook problems. I spend my life right now, we do, with the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update fallout, which I'm going to get to a big issue that I solved, and a lot of you contributed with emails to it. When I get to the email portion, I'm going to discuss that. The continued problems with updates that impact applications, especially Office. It's like an endless circle. Cleaning systems. I spent yesterday remoting in and cleaning systems that were slowing down, people clicking on the wrong things or something happening, and I'm running through our process to clean systems. So it just seems that'll never end. There's a few other things you can try. If you have a lot of people in Outlook, if you have the Nuance PDF add-in, disable it. Disable the VBA add-in. Some people have had luck with that. Something else I'm seeing with email is a huge uptick in spam over the last month and a half, maybe more. I have clients that are being crushed with 30 or 40 spam messages a day. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but for someone who doesn't get a lot of email and all of a sudden you're getting your inbox is being crushed because it's not being blocked. These are clients with SureWeb. Now, I talked to someone else whose AppRiver clients are also seeing an uptick with spam. So I know it's the spam filtering that the exchange hosted providers are using. They got to up their game because the spammers are getting very, very clever in crafting an email. They know how it's scored and how their emails are being blocked. And the spam is being crafted in such a way that it's getting a very low score and makes its way through. So they're defeating the current crop of spam filtering that is in place out there. So I'd like to know, what are you doing? Are you doing anything over and above, maybe beyond your email provider? What are you doing? Are we going to have to go back to having a creative spam filtering add-in now? Even though I have a hosted exchange, I thought that was the whole idea. We didn't have to worry about scanning for email viruses like that and worrying about the spam. And if your exchange hosts it, the hosting provider should be taking care of that. Well, if they're not stepping it up, then what are we doing about it for our clients? And I got to come up with some answers, especially for one who my biggest client is really getting crushed and it's becoming an annoyance and it's impacting productivity. What are we going to do? And what are you doing? And have you seen the same thing? So remote printing for clients. Instant House Call has a remote printing, but it doesn't work all the time. What I had to do for a client that had to have, and I've done this actually for two clients, that they have sub accounts in Instant House Call, but they have to get something printed locally to the local computer. A printer that's connected to the local computer, but they're remoted into their work computer. And this is just a simple workaround, which is actually part of what the remote printing option within Instant House Call is doing. So now I'm saying, well, let's do it yourself. So it's easier to know where the file's located. And if it doesn't work, here's how you can kind of work around this. Print to a PDF. So either have the full Adobe Acrobat or print to a PDF from the latest, you know, Microsoft Office or PDF Creator, which is what my standard free print to PDF software that I put on every computer that I touch. Unless they own the full Adobe, then I don't put it on. PDF Creator's on my client's computer. I said, and this is difficult because they want to print checks, which now it gets a little touchy. So will this work? And I tested it with my client. They're happy. It works. So they bring up the program that they need to print the checks. They pretend to print it by picking the printer PDF Creator. The option comes up to save the file, so they save the checks as a PDF. Now we transfer the file. I have a folder called Remote Print on their remote desktop, and then Remote Print in a folder on the desktop of their local computer. Now we just got to transfer the file, because now once it's a PDF on their local system, they just print any printer that they have on their system. I teach them how to transfer. An Instant House Call is very easy. Whatever program you're using, there's hopefully a transfer built in. So they right-click, transfer to Instant House Call. A little box pops up where they can now decide where are they going to put it. And once you put it in this folder, if you're doing this a few times, that will be the default, which makes it real easy. So if they have a few print jobs, and now they just save that PDF to the remote print folder on their desktop. They open the desktop. They go there. So I put a shortcut to this. They just open it up. She lined up a test check. in the local printer, and it printed perfectly. So I was worried about checks because that can get touchy for positioning of the numbers and the information. That I was not sure on any solution trying to print a check, but this worked. And I wanted to share that because it's, you know, we're not tricking it. We're printing it to a PDF, and then we're just transferring the PDF to the local machine and then printing it. So you develop a process with your client. This is a great way. Now they have that PDF as a record for the print job, and they can rename it, file it, do whatever they want. And what I taught my client was I told her, name it what it is when PDF Creator prompts you. So this way you have a meaningful name of that PDF, which is a great segue to the problem with scanning back to a system from a scanner to have the PDF come to your system. Well, Windows 10 Home and Professional Fall Creators Update no longer contains the SMB version 1 server by default after a clean installation. This is what I've been noticing, but also the client is not invoked. None of the SMBs turned on because all of a sudden my Western Digital Media Hub, when I went to go access it last weekend, I could no longer access it on my local network. It would not come up. I tried everything. That bothered me and set me on a path of researching and testing one night, Saturday night, because I emailed my team when I figured this out. It was about 4 a.m. When I get a problem for me that I just had to solve it, I needed to know what it was. My listeners knew, and you emailed me. So I'm going to start the emails and go over some of the links here and what you do in order to make this work. So you have to turn it on. So this is from Heath, the Lexmark scan to folder via SMB. And there's a reason for this. It's because it's to protect yourself. It's a security risk if you turn it on. So you have to know the risks before enabling this. On show 644, you mentioned having difficulty getting a Lexmark printer being able to scan via SMB. Last year, the WannaCry ransomware took advantage of SMB version 1, which was depreciated years ago, but not uninstalled by default. Well, actually, I'm seeing too many printer vendors still using this. In the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update, Microsoft no longer contain the legacy protocol, and as version 2 and 3 replaced it. Also, Lexmark has a page which details which MFP support which versions of SMB. So depending on the product, you may not be able to set up scan to folder with SMB. And he has three links here that I'm going to contain in the show notes. If you want to turn it on, how do you turn it on? So for me in my house, I know you want to disable version 1, but for me, I need it to navigate to an older Western Digital Media Hub, which no longer has any firmware updates or anything. That's it. It's SMB version 1, so I have no choice. If you want to turn it on, go to Control Panel, go to Programs and Features, and then you have Turn Windows Features On and Off. Now, the last show, I talked about going to this and activating FTP, which is more secure if you want to set up for the transfer, which I was able to use for my client and solve the immediate problem. Scroll down to SMB10CIFS File Sharing Support, and you have automatic removal, client, and server. And you can check off what you need. And that can allow you some flexibility, but you have to know that you're protected. You should have Crypto Prevent that is doing anti-ransomware and protecting you because you are going to be exposed by having SMB 1.0 turned on. So you got to know the risk and you got to weigh that versus turning this on or off. So for clients, I'm going to look for the printers, can we do a firmware upgrade or something to support a higher version of SMB? So this way, we're not risking the security for the system. Man, you guys were all over this. This is from Carl. Just to let you know, Creators Update switched off SMB1 by default for security reasons. All the best. Love the show. Kevin, just wanted to drop you a message related to your SMB from printer to Windows 10. Many printers only support older SMB protocol. It is possible that the printer is only speaking SMB version 1, which is absolutely what's happening. Microsoft has turned off SMB version 1. You can turn it back on as a Windows feature. Just to warn you, there are security reasons why Microsoft has removed it. I was blaming Windows 10 Fall Creators Update for doing something, but it was doing something to protect us. And I know security is an inconvenience, and that's what I sell my clients. That's what I tell them. Look, to be secure, it's going to be a little tougher. That's why there's longer lines in the in a TSA line to get on an airplane. Security is an inconvenience. We got to weigh that and manage it to make it not hurt as much. Being in front of it, knowing why things don't work, can lead us to now, okay, we got to upgrade something on the printer. Or look for alternatives to SMB, which is what my printer vendor did. But it was interesting that he didn't know about the SMB being turned off, and we kept trying the normal methods that something must have been misconfigured. And I think that's just lack of Windows 10 experience for that particular tech. Now, this is something that bothered me, and now I'm going to go back to my Mac. My Mac could see the share on my Western Digital Media Hub, and that bothered me. How come my Windows 10 systems didn't, but my Mac could? So I knew it had to be something to SMB once I got there, and then I started figuring out and then turned it on, reboot it, test it, and then I can see the shares. For me, right now, I need that for my system for transferring files to an older device. Just keep that in mind, though. It is less secure. You have been warned. Email from Robert, user with the Sony Vaio and Windows 10. Hey, Mike, I saw on your last show a user having an issue with their Sony Vaio laptop crashing after the Fall Creators Update. I would suggest a BIOS update. I know that Sony laptops had an issue when upgrading from Windows 8 to 8.1. The laptop had to have the latest BIOS and the latest Sony updates, or the system would crash. I had issues on some of the Asus computers doing the exact same thing when Windows 10 first came out, and a BIOS update fixed the issue. Thought I would throw that out there. Great show as usual, Robert. Great recommendation. I wish I had thought of that. When you're having problems like that and you've introduced something new, what you're trying to do with the system, get the make and model, go to the manufacturer of the system and get a BIOS update. If it's Dell, go to the Dell site or HP. It's usually a very simple file that you can do from either like a boot USB, or especially if you can't get into the system. But if you can get into the system, then there's usually a Windows executable that you can run. Make sure you double check, you know, measure twice, cut once. Double check that you're downloading the right version so you can do the BIOS update, and that may fix your problems. Don't guarantee, but it is absolutely something to try. Final email for the night from Dexter. Haven't heard from Dexter in a little while, and he wrote me a very nice email in responding to the Tech Vets show that Carrie Holzman and I did a couple weeks ago on the Malwarebytes incident. I want to thank Dexter. He has a couple paragraphs that's not for the show in talking about it, and I really appreciate it, and you gave me very, very good advice, Dexter. Thank you. There are a couple things that he mentions here that I do want to share. When you're talking about the shutdown command from the command line, I have found using the /F option to force a shutdown. Absolutely. If you are remotely shutting down a computer where you're using the /R or the /S, meaning you're shutting down or you're restarting, definitely add the slash F to force it, and then the slash T zero to do it immediately. So this way, if there's anything trying to close when it's trying to shut down, it's sort of like that message coming up. This program's still running. Are you sure you want to shut down? You won't need human intervention. It will help enforcing the restart or the shutdown, but using the shutdown command. That's a great tip. PCI compliance. You were talking about this. Here is what I think you are saying. Tell me where I am wrong. Have two WAN connections static IPs at the firewall, one for your main subnet and the other for a subnet that has only PCs running credit cards and credit card readers. Yes, you stated that more eloquently than I did. Then any PC or PCI subnet would have entries in the router to let PCI PCs use them on the main subnet, printers and apps. Is this correct? Yes, but you don't have to build anything into the firewall. You want to block everything because really it's going to be outbound. And you're right, you want to have a static IP address really for that firewall if you can have two Ethernet ports. Or what I recommend is putting a, yes, and I'm saying this, a dumb hub. If you only have one Ethernet connection from your ISP router, you may need to put a dumb hub from one Ethernet port, then two firewalls, two more devices with each one with its own static IP address, and then put the appropriate rules for navigating each network, being tighter, more locked down on the PCI. I don't even like doing DHCP for PCI compliance. I like to have every device have a static IP that is completely different than the IP addresses on the other network. Now, when you're doing a remote scan, announce the static IP address for the PCI portion of the network, and that's the IP address they are scanning to certify your PCI certification. What we want to do with any compliance is narrow the scope. The more you can narrow the scope, the easier the PCI compliance happens. So Marv in the chat, network segmentation, which is what we're doing. You could create VLANs if you have an intelligent switch. There's lots of ways to do this, but you got to, that's the proper term, network segmentation, where we have the PCI network as a separate network and limit the devices that are on that. And now when we're answering the questions for compliance, and this goes the same with HIPAA and with back in the day when I was in the corporate world, Sarbanes-Oxley, this is now you've narrowed the scope of the systems that you have to answer those questions for. If you have no Wi-Fi on that segment, therefore no Wi-Fi could ever impact that. There's a large block of questions where you're just NA, non-applicable, because there are no Wi-Fi devices on that network. It makes it easier to be compliant once you segment everything, narrow the scope of what are the systems that are impacted. I don't know the last time I mentioned this. For SOX compliance, when I was in the corporate world, I managed over 200 servers in our data center. SOX was the ability to accurately report the financials of the company. So once you narrowed what servers are the ones that can be touched, changed, modified, that controls the reporting of financials for the business, they're the ones that are now in scope. I had three servers only that impacted. So of the 200, 197 servers now were not in scope for any of the procedures and processes for SOX compliance. So once we did that, that sounds easy just for three SOX compliance. Let me tell you, that was a long laundry list of processes, procedures, more paperwork, more forms, more signatures, more review of things. It makes life more challenging. But if you're already doing best practices for security, for supporting the systems, it's not that difficult. We just had to add a few more pieces, I remember, where I wasn't maybe signing off each week on the firewall report for any intrusion. So now there had to be a little more. We were already doing it. It's just that there was no formal process. I find a lot of my smaller businesses are being doing the due diligence for PCI compliance. They're just not writing it down and saying what they're doing and then doing what they say. And sometimes it just takes a few procedures that have to be put in place and a few policies and communications with employees, how you handle a credit card number, what you're supposed to do. I am by no means an expert at this, but if you apply the common sense and you also make sure that they're putting the procedures in place, they may already be doing it informally. If you're involved with any kind of compliance, make sure you bring in someone that has experience with it that can guide you. It is well worth it. You don't want to be on the hook, do your client a disservice by recommending something wrong where now you're on the hook for problems and maybe failing an audit. Sometimes worth engaging. That's why having a different company doing the external scans, that's what they do, and they certify from an external point of view, there's no vulnerabilities from outside the network. Please remember to support not only the sponsors, but my affiliates. My sponsor, of course, Instant House Call at instanthousecall.com. Fabs Auto Backup 6 Pro, tremendous for transferring settings from one system to another. Computer Business Kit version 3 from Bryce over at TechNibble. If you have a repair business, IT consulting business, IT business, these are the forms that you need to begin. TechSiteBuilder.com. If you want the best tech website with the hosting and making sure that you're taking advantage of the search engine optimization for your company, for the website, these are things that are overlooked. That's where Matt Rodella from TechSiteBuilder can help you. I forgot to mention one of the most important things, and having Marv here in the chat, before I sign off, I was a guest on Pod Nuts this week with Marvin B. I believe it was Pod Nuts Pro Show 140. I will have a link prominently in the show notes. Marv and I discuss, yes, the Eagles win, but it's not all about football. How did it relate to my business and the tech business, especially today? Now, I already had today's show planned out. Today was the parade. There was over 2 million people down at the parade. What does that do to the logistics for my business and the support of my business? It's almost like a natural disaster. There's no way I could get to clients in Center City, Philadelphia, yet I have clients to support. So it's an interesting discussion on how a sporting event impacts your business. Give a listen. Now I can wrap up. I'll see you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.